welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here.
Hello, hello. How is everyone today? This is Nicole, and you've reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Today we have a really, really cool interview with Alice. She has been through it, man, and she is doing so beautifully. To continue on our spring theme of success stories from around the world, we have Alice in today from the UK, who suffered with lifelong IBS. Her first memories of IBS were as a toddler, sort of marked her entire journey of upbringing into her adulthood, so severe sometimes she would contemplate calling an ambulance. Bloating and pain in her stomach. I've experienced this TMS equivalent many times. It's one of the ones that just kind of gently flows through my system when I'm up to here, when my emotional reservoir is overflowing. I recognize it. I am aware. I am calmly confident. I know it will go, and it does. But she did not know this stuff. She was really locked in that fear cycle. And then as her journey progressed in her 20s, she lost both of her parents within a very short time span and was her mother's carer as she was battling cancer. So Alice was going through a lot, tremendous grief, which is obviously a really powerful human experience and one that can lead to a lot of fear and a lot of stuck emotions if you don't know what to do with it. So we're going to talk about it all. We're going to talk about the depression that she overcame in having children and then an adult ADHD diagnosis, which really also helped her put a lot of the pieces of the puzzle together. So an awesome conversation today with Alice. Also, just want to remind you of a couple of things we have coming up that you might want to take advantage of. Of course, our yearly Omega retreat at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York is June 23rd through the 28th. And if you would like to join us, you just hop over to eomega.org and search my name, Nicole Sachs, or go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, and click on the Retreats tab. Remember that if you sign up now, you are entered into an opportunity to win a free one-on-one session with me prior to Omega. We meet on Zoom. We have a real live session, and then we can be together at the retreat, which is so awesome. And so take advantage of that. And just reminding you also that Gigi Cockell and I are going to do a brain science deep dive on the brain science of TMS and really, really helping you understand and make sense of this so you can deepen your belief, which is really, really important for the nervous system and for this whole process to take place. So if you're interested in learning more about the brain science, and why the nervous system seeks to protect us with all of these chronic issues, this is a great opportunity. Go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, click on the Retreats tab, and you will see the link to join. And you can also go to my Instagram bio, which is at Nicole Sachs LCSW. If you go to my bio, the link will be in the bio as well. Come and join us for this experience, because I've found in my years of doing this that when you truly deeply understand the brain science as to why the body operates this way and manifests these chronic physical symptoms as a result of this overflowing emotional reservoir, it is so powerful in your healing trajectory and just really taking things to the next level. So do join us for that April 28th, and that's going to be at 10 a.m. Pacific time, and it will be recorded for all participants. All right, my loves, enjoy this interview with Alice.
Hi, everyone. Today we are here with Alice. Welcome, Alice.
Thank you. Thanks, Nicole. It's great to be here.
Thrilled to have you here. So Alice is in my larger Journal Speak community, my membership on Facebook, I'm sorry, not membership, my group on Facebook, where we are in active conversation every day about people's journeys, about where they are, about their successes, about their challenges. It's a really, really healing place to be. And Alice reached out after I put a post out that said, listen, we are ready to book for the spring season. Who has an exciting success story? Who wants to share their journey? And Alice's story was fantastic. So I invited her on the podcast. So as usual, Alice, I'm going to open it up to you to tell your story and we can take it from there.
Thank you, Nicole. It's fantastic to be here. I'm really privileged to be able to sort of talk to you about this. So my story starts really young, actually, when I was, I'd say kind of a toddler. I was known as having a really big bloated stomach. And then as I kind of jokes were made about it, and then as I got older into my teens, I was just known as having a funny tummy. I now know this was, well, it was diagnosed as IBS at the time, but it was just this awful bloating and pain that I would have pretty much every day. I'd be sitting at meals, I'd have to get down from the table and lie on the floor and kind of rub my tummy. So it was like a big defining feature of childhood, actually, and growing up. So when I was a teenager, it used to stop me from going out. I'd have to, you know, it would always happen just before a big night out or before going out for a meal. I'd have to lie down on the bed for half an hour. Sometimes I didn't go. Often if I was out, say, clubbing with friends, I'd have really bad bloating and pain. I'd have to go home. So it was very debilitating.
Yeah.
And really difficult. But it was just something that I thought I just had to live with. It was just there. I still got on with life, but, you know, it was quite a big deal. Sort of moving forwards, got to my 20s. And then that was when things kind of really changed for the worse. So when I was 22, I went away traveling for a year around the world. It was amazing. I was just sort of starting out in life. I came home after that amazing trip, and within a few months, my mum had been diagnosed with breast cancer.
Right.
So obviously that was a huge blow. But then just a few months later, my dad died suddenly and unexpectedly. And really from that point, I just shut down. I was in absolute shock. My mum was still unwell. I actually became her carer and lived with her for a while. I gave up my career that was just starting in London.
That's huge. That's really big stuff. And how old were you? 20?
So I was 23 when my dad died. And then, so this was all happening, but sort of 23, 24.
So young.
So I was still struggling, you know, to just cope basically. But I remember what I really remember was disassociation in my body, just pure shock. And I think I was just living with tension. Didn't really talk about anything because I was on this road of like, I've just got my first job. This is where I want to be. I want to make something of myself. And just starting out my career. So I just got on with it. And I actually remember I found out dad had died on a Saturday, and I was starting a dream job, literally my dream job, on the Monday. And I was just like, I have to go in. There's absolutely no way I'm going to, you know, it's bad enough that I've lost this. I can't lose anything else. And that kind of marked how I dealt with it. So definitely was in shock. Really sadly, 3 years later, when I was 26, my mum's cancer was terminal and she also died. And yeah, the symptoms that I'd been, or the emotions that I'd been holding in the whole time that she was ill, because I was trying to be strong for her and for my sister, I just suddenly started getting loads of physical symptoms.
That makes so much sense, by the way. I don't know how normal you understand that to be, but I mean, that is the way it works. And it's not just the way it works with this work, with my work. You know, I've been doing a lot of research lately about the nervous system in writing my next book. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but if you break your ankle and you are running from a predator or from someone pursuing you, you will not feel that pain until you're safe. Until you have, like, you know, in early days of early man, you know, gotten to a cave and gotten yourself secure, or, you know, these days, if you, you know, lock yourself in a room, you won't even feel, you will run on a broken ankle
until you're safe. And that's crazy what the brain can do for us. So, I mean, that makes so much sense that your mother passes. And I'm so sorry, by the way. That's such a huge – my dad died when I was 27 and I thought it was going to end me. So the both of your parents, it must have been just unthinkable. And then all the symptoms came crashing in because finally you were had space to feel them.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it was kind of – ridiculous really, but I actually went on a trek to the Great Wall of China for a charity cancer research that I'd been raising money for while mum was ill, and I'd postponed it once, and then the second time it was actually just 6 weeks after she died. I went on this huge trek. It was really physically demanding. I held it all together because I went with a friend, but I didn't know anyone else on the trek, so obviously I couldn't kind of be breaking down every night. So I was just like, yeah, everything's fine, I'm doing this, I'm really strong. And I remember coming home, going to bed, and I didn't really get out of bed again for at least a week. My body just shut down completely. And that was when, I now know all these physical symptoms. So exhaustion, the IBS got really, really bad. I had depression, anxiety. I couldn't drive. I was so, I guess it was anxious or shocked or something. I just didn't feel safe. Driving. So this was obviously a really tough time. But again, I think what happened and why this is, I mean, this was 20 odd years ago, but I think what happened was because at that point I really wanted children. I was married. I got married in between this time. I didn't want to have children while I was depressed. I kind of made that decision. I knew that wasn't going to be a good thing. So I had some grief counseling just for 6 weeks. I had a course of antidepressants, and I kind of got through it within maybe a year, or thought that I'd done enough work to then move forward. So I got pregnant, which was great. I had a couple of children, and genuinely for probably the next 15 years, I was just living with on edge, living with exhaustion, crying frequently, loads of physical symptoms, fatigue, pain, such bad pain in my stomach that, you know, I nearly called an ambulance a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I didn't really think it was serious, but I just thought, this is so horrific.
Yeah.
It must be something.
Right.
Had all the tests. I've been through every single diet, allergy testing, Chinese medicine, anything and everything you could think of. Obviously nothing was found. It was completely normal. But one thing that was really a feature of this time was like massive health and death anxiety.
Yes.
I spent most of my time in shock that people around me weren't dropping dead.
Right. Of course.
You know, and in any physical ailment that I got, I instantly went to, well, that's death. That's it. So
I relate to this so much. When my father died, he died very suddenly. He had a listeriosis. So he was on a business trip and he ate something that had a large amount of listeria, which is a neurotoxin. And he died literally overnight, like in a hotel room. So that was the shock of all shocks. He was 53. And I went through a stage where I was certain that I was going to die. And it's so crazy what the brain will do to you. And I remember those days. I had one time where I was just like, I got a TMS headache so bad, I couldn't turn my head. And I was sure I had bacterial meningitis, which is what ended up taking his life. And it was like 3 days I couldn't get out of bed. And this is even with the knowledge I have of this work. So it's really powerful stuff when you are in that kind of shock and fear.
Yeah. And it gripped me for literally years. I mean, I did know that something was wrong, but I kind of thought, well, I have grieved and it's been 10 years. Surely I'm over this, you know. So I feel like I was just very, very stuck for all that time. So that continued. I just kind of got on with life, but I was really, you know, there was something really wrong and I was struggling quite a lot. Although on the outside, I was seemingly absolutely fine. I made myself extremely busy. I had lots of started businesses. I was working loads, you know, I was doing lots of things and, you know, seemed really like I had a lot going on. But then I think when I hit 40, things really changed, and it was just that big milestone. But I just suddenly thought, I can't do this anymore. Something has to change. Mm-hmm. It was just too debilitating. I was exhausted a lot of the time. So at that point, I kind of really started diving into therapy again. I did lots of different types of therapy. I trained as a yoga teacher. So really kind of getting into my body, understanding my breathing, understanding how emotions and trauma sit in the body. So that was great. Things were kind of ticking along. I think I was learning a little bit. I still had the symptoms there. I was still struggling with IBS every day. And then I got COVID. So it was 2020. I got COVID in November. It wasn't great. I was fairly ill, but, you know, I didn't go to hospital or anything, but I remember the absolute fear at that time of that first wave, where I think it was something like, if you got through the first 48 hours, it could either turn and get really, really bad.
I remember that. Yes. Remember so that? Scary. Yeah.
So I mean, that fear, I literally remember it now. It was in my body. I felt it, and I felt all these sensations with the COVID, kind of like electricity in my head, you know, very strange sensations. But the fear is what I remember most. Mm-hmm. So I recovered okay, you know, in a few weeks I felt reasonable. And then about a month later, long COVID hit. And I remember saying to friends way before I got COVID that I know I'm going to get long COVID if I get COVID. Now, this was before I knew anything about your work and that suggestibility. But in my body, I knew how broken I was, and I knew how depleted my immune system was and my nervous system. And I, you know, I just knew I'd get it. And so that's what happened. I had long COVID for 8 to 9 months. Jesus. And it was really rough, really, really rough. So we know now, you know, I now know all the symptoms. It doesn't matter what you have, but it was the, you know, lots of classic symptoms: exhaustion, post-exertional malaise, chest pains, breathing difficulties, you know, all of, and the fatigue was the worst, to be honest. That was when, unbeknownst to me, I just made this decision. And I don't know if it's because I'd started to open up to some of this work, but I just made this decision that there was no reason why I couldn't get better. It didn't make sense. I knew that the COVID hadn't been that bad for, you know, in my body. I didn't fundamentally feel like anything had been damaged. I just thought, I'm not having this. I am not accepting it. I know I can get better. And I made it my mission. Luckily, I was able to, with how my work was set up and stuff. I made it my mission that I was going to recover. And I then dove really deeply into healing physically and emotionally.
You know, I want to just put a finer point on that. There, you know, I could see someone potentially listening to that statement and saying, oh, you know, that's really good. She had a positive attitude. But it's so much more than that. Your perception is your reality. If you think you are unsafe, you are unsafe. And your whole body is going to respond in kind. And if you think you're safe, you're on the road to healing. And I know that that can't be faked, but I want people to understand when they're listening to this that your nervous system has nothing other than your conscious and unconscious input to decide whether you're safe or not. And having that kind of resolve and looking at the facts and saying, there is no good reason why I should continue to be well. My lungs aren't damaged. My heart isn't damaged. I did not have severe COVID. I wasn't on a ventilator for a month. Like, there are situations where it really makes sense that people are going to have a really long and very physical road out of this. But most people, a very high percentage of people with long COVID, do not fit that description. And you were one of them. And so it's just so important to highlight that and to realize the power. It's not just like the power of positive thinking. It's literally the power of the brain science behind deciding that this is not going to be your future. And so that's a really powerful moment for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was. And I still don't really know why I knew that. Mm-hmm. I guess I had enough of feeling physically rubbish. And I just thought, no, this is, I probably knew it was my wake-up call. Mm-hmm. And I probably knew, I think from reading and researching, that almost this was my opportunity. I was being forced to stop. There was no question. I couldn't keep going. I couldn't pretend anymore. Like, I literally was incapacitated, I was forced to to just do everything differently. And I guess on some level I realized that. And then I kind of went really deep into, okay, my body needs to heal and I need to do whatever I can to help it. So it wasn't consciously your work actually, but I think there was a lot of stuff about the nervous system that I understood, and I understood what I was trying to do and that I needed to regulate and balance my nervous system. So I did a lot of, you know, a lot of processes, things like yoga nidra. I looked at my diet. I worked with an Ayurvedic doctor. You know, it was still functional stuff, so it wasn't necessarily looking at the emotions, but the
You were on your way. Yeah, you need true readiness is everything, and whatever it takes to be ready to really dive into this is absolutely imperative.
I was kind of moving, so I was doing all this stuff, and you know, it still took a while. You know, I was doing it every day, and I used to wake up, and I remember another turning point was I used to wake up every day feeling absolutely rubbish. Just, you can't explain how you feel worse than when you went to bed, and I used to wake up every day and my husband would say, how do you feel today? And I'd just be like, oh, I feel crap, I feel awful. I feel like this, I'm aching, I'm pain, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then I noticed that whenever I asked him, and he's always been like this, he'll always say, oh, I feel good. Yeah, I feel okay, I feel great. And that's even after he's done a night shift or, you know, been not had much sleep. And something in me just decided, you know what, I'm actually going to say that I'm okay every morning that I wake up, even if I'm not. And I started to do that, and there was just this little mindset shift that I wasn't lying to myself, but it was just, no, actually stop focusing on the negative, just, you know, say I'm okay and move on from there. And I think that sort of self-talk gradually really helped me stop focusing on how rubbish I felt, and actually I am okay, I can do something.
So Alice, how did you find your way into this specific work? What was the turning point there?
Yeah. So, this was, like I said, 8 months in, I was pretty good. I was almost better. I was on holiday. Suddenly overnight I started to have, a different symptom, which was acid reflux, like burning through my throat. Now I had absolutely never had that in my life before. And I immediately went into a panic and was just like, oh my God, it must be something I'm eating. But because I had such a clean diet at this point, you know, so healthy, I knew it wasn't anything I was eating. So I was kind of like, okay, what am I going to do? I started Googling, and actually I came straight to your website, Nicole, the Cure for Chronic Pain website, where acid reflux was one of the TMS potential symptoms.
Yes.
So I saw that and I was like, oh my goodness, what is this? And then, which was more life-changing, was that I saw that IBS was on there as well, and so was long COVID. And honestly, within literally that moment, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be fine. This is amazing.
Oh, like, it's a good feeling.
So that was the long COVID went pretty quickly after that, you know, in a few more weeks, and I felt
did
like
you
I
immediately was start a journal speak practice? How did you get into the work?
Yes, I did it immediately. So I read about it, I think that evening. I went to bed really excited, just thinking, I actually genuinely feel like I finally found the key to all of this. And I started the next day when I was on holiday. I took myself off down to the bottom of the garden. I had a book with me and a pen. And I did maybe three or four days in a row because I was on holiday. And it was just immediately I knew it was what I needed. And it was really powerful. And I was actually thinking about this. The drawing exercise, I can't remember what day that's from, but drawing your pain.
So yeah, so what Alice is referring to is I have a course called Freedom from Chronic Pain, and she was obviously working through the course. So yes, one of the first few days, it seems juvenile, but it's so powerful. I do have you draw your pain and explain why. So tell me how that impacted you.
Yeah, that for some reason, the drawing, because I never draw, I think I'm terrible at art. I'm one of those people that, you know, did badly at school in art and was shamed forever that I couldn't draw anything.
Same.
So I draw this really rubbish, you know, sort of figure. And then like just stuff just came out of nowhere that I just hadn't considered. So I knew the IBS was obviously the main thing I was drawing like tangles in my stomach. I was drawing daggers and all sorts of things. And then it started spreading, and I went to kind of my chest, and I've always been terrified of getting breast cancer. And I kind of realized that as I was drawing. Mm-hmm. And then just stuff all over the body that was surrounding me. I kind of just got this sense that, oh my God, I felt just so much in my body all through the years that I hadn't acknowledged.
It's really a tender exercise to slow down and to be with your body. It's like your body has been speaking to you your entire life through pain, through sensations, through tightness, through fatigue. Like, it's just begging you to pay attention and listen. And we are not taught. We simply are not taught that we need to. We're not taught that it's speaking. We're not taught that we need to listen, and we're not taught how. And so to begin this process and really open that up for yourself is just, that's the most life-changing thing, I think. You know, it's a combination of your relief and your acknowledgement that you have come home to something. You know, I'm sure when you got to the page and you saw IBS and acid reflux and long COVID on the CMS list, you were like, okay, there's like that immediate rest and repair that comes over the nervous system when you're like, someone's going to help me out with this, which is what I want everybody who ever listens to this podcast to feel. I want you to feel you've come home, you've arrived. We're here for you. We're not urgent. We're not desperate for you to heal. We're just here. We're here and we're doing this with you. So that's a great feeling. And I'm so grateful that you had that experience and then to start doing the work. And I love that you jumped right in and did the course. And it's not a promotion for the course. It's just the reason I created it in the first place is that I get hundreds and hundreds of emails of people saying, explain to me how to do this. And so I was like, I better explain this once because there's not enough of me to go around to explain it to everyone. And I love that you jumped right in because the exercises are meant to draw you out, no pun intended, literally, but to draw you out. And so you did that. Wow. Okay. So what happened next? How did it go?
So I had kind of a very immediate feeling, kind of like you said, of just relief. And although I might have still had symptoms, I just had this absolute deep knowing that I was going to be okay. And it felt like nothing else. I was all in straight away. Yes. I loved how the course, I mean, I'm a person who loves doing things like in order in, you know, courses. It really appealed to me. And I just thought I am doing exactly what I need to be doing right now. This is my next stage of healing. And it really felt like the perfect continuation of all the kind of all that prep work, I guess, that I'd been doing and I hadn't realized before. So I got home. I continued the work. I was journal speaking. Not every day, but most days. And I think that carried on for a good 6, 7, 8 months. I made it, again, a real priority. But what I mean, so much stuff came out. And this is where the kind of the grieving and that really helped. That, you know, to be honest, the IBS and the physical symptoms I could let go of really quite quickly. And they did move quite quickly on. But I think that emotion that was stuck in me still needed to come out. And that was all that repressed grief that I'd been holding on to for years. So much came out. It was really difficult, but I was so ready for it. I mean, I've been waiting to do this for years, literally. So I didn't have too much trouble kind of coming up with what was going on for me, but still I had so many revelations on the page as I was writing. You know, they were literally coming daily at first. And I was just like mind blown. Like, how did I not realize this? How did I not make these connections before? But I think what really was interesting was the fact, so you time for 20 minutes and write. And always when I first started out, often I didn't know what I was saying. I was just writing. I'm writing on the page. I have no idea what I'm why am I here? What am I doing? This is all rubbish, blah, blah, blah. The classic stuff. And then without fail, 90% of the time, by about minute, I don't know, I wasn't looking, but maybe 15 or something, all this stuff would come out. I'd be like, boom, where has that come from? And I just, because I trusted the process, I just knew it was in there.
Oh my God. It's like I paid you to say these things.
I know, by the way. It's very true.
P.S. I did not. No, but Alice, this is why when people are constantly coming to me and saying, I have 5 minutes, why can't I just do it here and there? And I say, because there's something that happens in your mind, body, spirit system, whatever it is that is allowing you access to your deeper self, to your higher self, to the greater energy, whatever you want to call it, that when you sit with yourself, and I just, 20 minutes is a sweet spot that I chose because Dr. Sarno used to have people do it 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes in the evening. And I was like, damn, no one's going to listen to me if I tell them to do it that much. And so I worked for years and years just to boil down what is the sweet spot where people will get what they need. And for some reason, 20 minutes, it's enough. If you want to keep going when your timer goes off, good for you. You know, Godspeed. Do whatever it is you want to do. But 20 minutes, it is somewhere around like 13, 14, 15 minutes, whatever it is, some point you release. It's like you just open and you're like, wait, what really is that? It's like this beautiful moment. And anyone listening, please, whether you're resistant or you're new to this or you fell off the wagon and want to get back on, be inspired that there is something that happens and it is between you and you, every version of you, where you're invited into a space that you did not know before. And I have done workshops with people who are in their 60s and 70s that after their first journal speak come up to me after the workshop and say, I just realized something about myself that I have never known in this one afternoon in my 60s or 70s. And I'm like, yes, that's what this is about, because this stuff is in there. You know, I often say if a tree falls in the forest and nobody is there to witness it, it still makes a sound. These feelings and grief and unfelt things are trees falling in your little inner forest every day, and they're making a sound. You might not be there to witness it, but they're talking through your stomach and through your head and through your long COVID and fatigue and fibromyalgia and back pain. They're speaking to you. And being in this space of safety in your journal speak practice allows you to hear. And it is just fucking magical. It really is. So thank you for being so articulate in describing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I noticed it so many times that, you know, it's no coincidence. And then I think once you know that that will happen, sometimes, not every time.
Not every time.
No, definitely not every time. And I've had some really, you know, flat sessions.
Boring.
Where, yeah, I'm just like, oh, well, that was, you know, never mind. But I think it is trusting a process. And I think if you can trust that, then amazing things will come out. But not holding yourself, not trying too hard each time. I think that lets things flow, and that leads, you know, that lesson is kind of everywhere. If you try and you grip and you hold on and you force it and you're fighting or you're wanting something, it just holds you in. It doesn't allow things to flow.
Yes.
And I think that was all part of that same process where I was just starting to let things flow. And it all happened, you know, fairly organically, I think.
So Alice, before we move on to another topic that I know we want to cover, which is the concept of adult ADHD, and I definitely am very curious about your reflections, paint us a little picture of what life is like for you now. So you had all this stuff you shared with us, this story that was, you know, really challenging at times. And you had this loss with your parents, obviously the long COVID, which was a huge factor, and then being brought to your knees when the body just said no more. You did this work, you described it beautifully. What does it look like now?
So it's an ever-changing picture in some ways, but I think I have literally blossomed in every area of my life. So even through the long COVID, but just knowing that I was healing myself, I felt like I had such power and such agency, and that belief and that opening up has just led to my life looking really quite different. So I had been self-employed my whole life because I didn't want to be told what to do. I didn't want to be held down. I was worried about my, genuinely worried that my stomach digestive problems would be a problem in a workplace, you know, very traditional. I was imagining going into an office and it would be very difficult. Anyway, that wasn't the only reason I was self-employed, but it really, you know, that was something that I just thought, I can't work for someone else. I've just got to do my own thing. This is just how I am. Which has been great in many ways, but literally once I started this work, once I started feeling better, I kind of made a decision. Do you know what? I think I'm well enough now. I'm not worried about working too hard and becoming ill again. And I was offered like my dream job, in something completely different to the one, you know, 25 years before. And I took it because I wasn't afraid that I would overwork or that I would get ill again, which was a real fear of mine, unconsciously. So I've been using my experience. So all of the stuff that I did to heal, I began writing meditations, making music again, and working with people. So, you know, working one-to-one with people, teaching yoga, just being expansive and teaching this kind of nervous system regulation, breathing, meditation, just being in this world of knowing that we've got agency over ourselves and over our health, right, and not feeling right. held back. So I do still have some pain sometimes, you know, right. I still get some bloating. I get random things going on. I had a really weird foot thing going on for about 2 months, and I did get caught up in it for a moment and thought, oh God, what's this? Like, what have I done? And then I was like, it's okay. I've let it go. There's, I had no injury and it's moved on.
See, so, now that is something I need to highlight, you guys. There is no cure for the human condition and there is no cure for human pain. Sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies and they are literally interchangeable. So what Alice is describing is something that happens to me plenty, which is, and I talked about it, I think 2 weeks ago on the podcast with my wrist. It's going to be a few weeks now when this airs, but it's normal. It's normal to have a foot thing, to have a stomach thing, to have a shoulder thing, to have a head thing for a short period of time until you wake up and say, ah, I see what this is. My nervous system is dysregulated. Let me see what I can do to get it back in order. Let me rededicate to my journal speak practice and my meditation and whatever other, you know, things you do in order to regulate. People have all sorts of practices, yoga, breathing, tapping, you know, whatever it is, and get yourself back in center. The symptom will go. Chronic pain is an epidemic of fear and meaning that dysregulates your nervous system. It does not have to be a lifelong struggle. And so I love what you're saying because it's exactly what happens to me and to everyone I know who's living on this plane.
And I think a really powerful practice that I've taken from your work, as much as all three of the elements. So I know it's believe, do the work, and the practice loving kindness to yourself. But that part of it for me, that third part of just being kind, mm-hmm. practicing self-compassion, I just feel is so, so powerful. And is whenever I have any of these symptoms, yes, the journaling helps, but sometimes I feel like I haven't got much, you know, I've got so much out over the years. I don't necessarily always do that, but what I do is the loving kindness, and I just come back to just, speaking to myself lovingly.
Isn't it amazing though, when softly. You don't realize how important that is, how you shit on yourself constantly? Like, it's unbelievable to me the energy of the voice that I can have for myself unless I'm completely awake and aware to the fact that – and sometimes self-compassion is just about not needing to believe everything you think. You know, it's about real all the, you know, the mantras and the way we talk to ourselves and, you know, hand to heart and all the things that I do believe in. But sometimes it's just when I have like an old reflexive thought – like, well, of course you screwed that up, or you've always been lazy, or whatever it is. I say, wait a second. Whose voice is that? Whose voice is that? Is that my dad's when he was just in his own shit and he didn't know how to talk to me? Is it the baton I picked up in my teens where I decided that if I didn't ride myself, I would never be anything? Like, what? I'm 51. Like, what voice is that? And is it still serving me? And even if I can't get to the real underneath of it, I can just say, I don't need to say that today. No thanks. And it's just about being aware. If you can be awake and aware, you always will have that power.
Yeah. And I frequently now pull myself up when I sort of go, you know, I'm like, oh, for goodness sake, I can't believe I've done that. And I'll just turn it around and say, hey, it's okay. You've got this. You are doing brilliantly. Like, just keep going. You know, exactly like I'd say to one of my kids or to a friend. And that's it. And it doesn't have to be this big, deep thing. It's just those little moments where you're like, it's okay. You've got it.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. All right, Alice, in our time left, I want you to talk about, you mentioned in your email that you came very late in life to the understanding that you are diagnosed with ADHD. And I think probably this is going to beg a whole episode in the future, but I'm still kind of like collecting my thoughts and my information on it. I mentioned to you before we jumped on air that my oldest daughter, who's 21, was diagnosed with ADHD when she was a junior in high school, 17. And in looking back on her struggles in life and since, it is such an important lens to look through, the lens of neurodiversity and just the difference between what it is to function with a brain that is not struggling with ADHD and what is, and different neurodivergence, of course. And so so I do think it's really important because I think it affects you emotionally. At least I know it affected her by being told by her teachers, by me, you know, why can't you just get it together? Like, just organize yourself. Like, why are you keep forgetting things? Like, oh my God, your room. Why, you know, what is wrong with you? And like, I feel bad. I mean, obviously, you know, I didn't mean it either. But like, when someone is really, truly struggling in a way that is above and beyond what makes sense to a person who doesn't struggle that way, I think there can be a lot of shame. So like I said, I think there's a whole episode that needs to be done on this, but what is your experience with it?
Yeah, well, I was only diagnosed last year. I had absolutely no idea that I had it, but then I started working in this area in mental health, physical health, and something clicked. And actually, I thought all of my troubles that we've just talked about, all of the chronic pain, the grief, I kind of thought it was all to do, well, most of it was to do with my circumstances. So the external stuff that had happened. So the death of my parents.
Right.
And, you know, childhood and all that kind of thing. Now that I know that I have ADHD, I think I've been in kind of chronic flight and freeze pretty much my whole life. I just really feel like I've been masking for so long and I didn't know, to try and cover up the difficulties, kind of trying to be like, you know, perfectionism, trying to show this face to the world, but not feeling like there was something wrong, but having no idea what it was, struggling in certain areas and excelling in others and not understanding that. And I really do think that a lot of the emotional stuff that I've had going on is a result of the dysregulation and the ADHD causing me to find certain things really difficult. And also the way that my life has panned out, the entrepreneurship, the constantly being busy, the constantly being driven, the having the burnouts, feeling exhausted. I genuinely thought it was my way of coping with grief. Actually, I think maybe partly it was, but also it was just that is the way I'm wired. I am just driven to constantly do stuff. And that's tiring. And if you don't realize it, that causes all of these symptoms, that causes anxiety and tension in your body. It causes burnout. It causes exhaustion. And that's kind of been how my life has been. So now I know it's an absolutely massive thing because, you know, I think a lot of the stuff that I've done, all of this work has made me more aware generally. And I think that helped a lot. Mm-hmm. But I still have these huge tendencies to overwork and to just hyper focus and to go off on tangents. And I can kind of stop that to an extent now. And also the shame that I've carried for so many years because of decisions that I've made or behavior. And I just think, why did I do that? You know, I couldn't work out why. And I think there's a reason now. I can understand it more.
You know, it's really making me realize how much more I want to focus on this because it's not just ADHD. It's anything where your essence, your nature, your God-given whatever you got is causing you to be a certain way, act a certain way, focus on a certain thing, not be able to meet other people's expectations in a way that feels easy, can just the shame is really like my biggest focus, because I think that, and by the way, this translates to every one of us. I mean, I look back at my life and I just was a very big personality. This is just my nature. I was really confident and outgoing. I would raise my hand for everything in school. And like the teacher would literally look across the classroom and say, "Does anyone else have anything to contribute other than Nicole?" Like, it, like the shame of being just like who you are is something that I really want to take the time on this podcast and in my communities to acknowledge that, like, we need in that third leg of the stool, the patience and kindness, to embrace rewriting those narratives in whatever way we can. And I see you nodding because I'm sure your ADHD diagnosis is helping you. It's just a tool in your toolkit to rewrite some of that narrative that you were confused about. Why am I motivated this way? Why do I act this way? Why do I not do this thing that I need to do? You know, whatever it is. And so definitely food for thought for future podcasts to really delve into that, because we don't need to carry that kind of shame. It's really not helping us anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And yeah, I think the shame is probably the biggest part for many of us, you know, especially when you're diagnosed so late in life and you've lived your whole life thinking there's definitely something wrong with me, but I've no idea what it is. So it's a huge benefit. And unfortunately, not everyone can be diagnosed. There's huge waiting lists. It's, you know, it is a big issue at the moment. But I think even if you suspect and you recognize that this could be something that is going on for you, you know, do more research.
Yeah.
And just look at what the tools are that can help you. It doesn't need to be medication. You know, it doesn't,
yes,
doesn't need to be a certain route. It can, I think just the knowledge can play a really big part, and that you're not alone, and that you're there, you know, you are normal.
Yes, there's so many ways to be normal. And I think that's true. And that's one thing I love about the internet. If you are discerning about what you decide to take on, because obviously there's a lot of bullshit out there too. If you're going to trusted websites, you know, you can find really good tools. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You know, there's so many different tools for so many different diagnoses. And like Alice said, you don't need to have a doctor put a stamp on your chart. If you feel that you are exhibiting symptoms of a certain, you know, set of symptoms that would define a certain diagnosis, check it out. See, like, okay, if I were ADHD, what are some great, well-established tools that could help me, you know? Or what are some things I can do? Or what is just some mindset shift I can have as to not continue to shame myself? So that's just really, really good advice. And I'm thrilled you brought it up. Yeah. Well, Alice, this has been just such a lovely interview. I really enjoyed your story. I really enjoy how you get it. You know, it just really warms my heart because it's so helpful for people to understand in a clear and concise way how to approach this kind of stuff. So I'll ask you the question I often ask, which is, do you have any best practices or advice you'd give someone who's in their struggling, suffering moment and might need a little boost?
Well, what really, really helped me was believing and understanding that the body is designed to move towards healing.
Yes.
That is just what happens. And it helped me when I thought about, say, I had a cut on my hand.
Yes.
It doesn't need help to heal. Often it will just heal. And I think once I understood that, I kind of felt anything's possible. And I know that isn't the case in every scenario. I'm not saying we can heal ourselves from everything. But if you believe that the natural way is that your body wants, if you give it the right circumstances and you're in the right circumstances, the body wants to move towards health. And that just made me feel really empowered and not as scared anymore, because even though I was feeling terrible and I had all these symptoms, I knew I had work to do. There is work to do. You do have to work on regulating your nervous system. You do have to work on getting the emotions out, moving them through the body, getting them unstuck. But if you're doing all of that, just believing that you are moving gradually towards health, and it's not a straight journey, it's not linear, there will be dips and bumps in the way, but you're doing what you can to move your body in the right direction, and it naturally wants to go there. And I think once I stopped, it's that whole idea of like the wisdom of your body, befriending your body. So yeah, the wisdom of your body and befriending your body and just not being scared of it. Mm-hmm. I think is so, so powerful, that belief piece.
Yeah, I love what you said about a cut. You know, if we're just going to take the most simple analogy, if you cut your hand, and it doesn't require stitches, right? I mean, it's not like you severed your limb, but if you cut your hand, if you clean the dirt out and open it to the air, your cut will heal. All we're doing here is cleaning the dirt out. We're not manipulating anything. We are opening the body to natural healing by removing the dirt, by removing the barrier between ourself and our understanding of our deeper self. And that is what we're doing. And I love that analogy. So thank you for bringing that up. That is great advice. Well, Alice, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you, Nicole. You are so welcome.
So wonderful. It's so wonderful to have these conversations and to be in the space of knowing how many people out there can benefit. So it always makes me so happy. And for everyone out there, if you're enjoying the podcast, if you could hop over to iTunes and rate and review it, it really helps people find the podcast. And until next week, this has been Nicole Sachs with the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast, and I will see you then. Bye-bye.